Hey, listen, are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience a basketball game courtside rather than on your couch. Maybe you go to a hockey game and you bang on the glass instead of your own TV in your own living room. Then head on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. So whether it's NBA, Major League Baseball, WrestleMania, Coachella, maybe a Broadway musical, FanExchange will get you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code Rome, and you'll get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange. We have tickets. That's Fan Exchange. Absolutely loaded to start hour number three. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California, and we are in the Quicken Loans studio. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Arian Foster, former NFL, has got a brand new album. It is great. And once again, not great for an athlete. Great, period. Great album. And always been one of my favorite personalities. He will be in studio next segment. In the meantime, we start hour number three by talking some football. We are joined by a 16-year NFL vet. He is a Super Bowl champion, a member of the 2000s All-Decade Team, 7-time Pro Bowler, 125.5 career sacks. He was the 11th pick back in 2002 out of Syracuse. He announced his retirement last month. I knew we had to get caught up. Dwight Freeney is my guest. Dwight, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, man?
Dwight, I'm doing great. Nice to visit with you. As I mentioned, you announced your retirement last month, but it sure seemed like you could have kept on playing. So what was it that made you feel like this was the right time to walk away?
Well, you know what? I just had my fun, man. You know, I played a while. You know, I played 16 years, 16 great years. You know, I think this is a young man's game. You know, in the end, yeah, I could have played a couple more years, but, you know, I've already won a Super Bowl. You know, I've done so many other things. You know, what would I be playing for exactly? You know, and the thing is, I think the big thing that weighed in was the fact that I'm healthy right now. You know, I have my health. You know, I'm walking around feeling good. My head is on straight. So why risk that to play a few more years, you know, for what? You know, even though I still love the game and I know I can could continue to play it.
Dwight Freeney joining us. It seems to me that's the thing, right? You want to walk away with your faculties intact. You want to walk away while you feel great. And then, Dwight, you want to do something that so few athletes are able to do. You want to walk away on your own terms. It sounds like you were able to do that. How proud are you of that fact?
No, I'm beyond proud because, you know, a lot of times, like you said, you don't get the opportunity to walk away on your own terms. You know, the NFL kicks you out, or you can't, for whatever reasons why, you know, not under your control is why you are not playing anymore. So for me, you know, just to be able to do that, knowing that I could continue to play if I wanted to, makes me feel great.
We're talking to Dwight Freeney. Let me ask you about something that happened early in your career. There was a moment where you were in the locker room with Raheem Brock and Chad Bratsky, and he walked in and you said, man, he's looking old, and it took him about an hour to make it to his chair. You said to Raheem in that moment, there is no way I am seeing more than 10 years. I'm done. That's it. What do you remember about that incident and the impact it had on you?
Oh, man, it's hilarious when I look back, you know, because, you know, my last 3 or 4 years, I always get a kick, man. I walk in the locker room and I always say, man, I'm Chad right now. I am Chad. Like,
right.
These young guys are looking at me saying, man, this guy is old. You know, I remember playing, you know, using you in the video game in you know, when I was 8 years old, or, you know, I get those stories, you know. So it's so funny when I talk about that story because, honestly, me and Raheem sat there like, man, this dude is ancient, man. You know, Chad's a great guy, great player and all that, but it was just, man, there's no way we're playing this long. Look at this guy. And look at me now. You know, I'm year 16, you know, and still playing, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, not only did you become that guy, you went right beyond that guy. And it wasn't 10 years, it was 16 years. And that was after you came into the league with this rap that you were undersized. So then what's it mean to you that some people thought you were undersized? And then you go on and play not 10 years, but 16 years, and you have one of the all-time great careers, despite being, quote, undersized.
No, absolutely. And I think I use that as fuel, you know, and it's that fuel that, you know, when you have those days where you just don't feel like working out, or you feel, you know, oh, well, nine reps was good enough. You know, you use those types of things to propel you in those moments where you just don't feel like doing something. And I did that so often in my career, you know, and I use this fuel. I always said, you know, look, I'm not a basketball player. Why do I need to be 6'5", you know? Am I grabbing rebounds here, guys, or blocking shots? I get it. But, you know, for me being undersized, you know, I had natural leverage, you know, and it's about starting at point A and getting to point B, and that's pretty much what I decided to do, and I did that often. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, being undersized was actually a bad thing. I think it was actually a good thing for me.
Dwight Freeney, my guest, and I was going to say it's a game of leverage anyway. You're a Super Bowl champ. You're a seven-time Pro Bowler, a member of the 2000s All-Decade Team, and the owner of a trademark spin move that is one of the most devastating pass rush moves in history. As a result of that resume, now there's talk about you possibly going to the Hall of Fame. Is that in the back of your mind, and what's your reaction to that talk?
Well, you know, that's something that's not under my control. You know, I gave it my all. In my 16 years, you know, I've left everything out there on the field, man. So for me, I've done everything I could possibly do. And whether it be first, second, third, whatever ballot, whatever happens from there is going to happen, you know. And, you know, I don't get upset about things I can't control. I can only, you know, really get upset at things that I can control. And I know I went out there and gave it my all, man. And I left my mark on the game. You know, every time I see a guy who's undersized getting drafted so high, you know, I know, like, that didn't happen before me. You know, before me, it was a guy being drafted my height, my stature would be a situational guy, first of all. And second of all, you know, they'll be drafted late in the third or fourth round or something like that. They were going to waste a big pick on that. And then also seeing there, looking at guys do spin moves left and right on the TV. You know, I definitely left my mark when I see that.
Dwight Freeney joins us. And Dwight, that spin move is something. It's iconic, and the story goes that originally it had its roots in your time as a power forward in basketball. That we know. Yeah. But when did you first start breaking that out on a football field?
Well, it was in practice one time in high school. You know, it was just kind of guys out there. You know, I think back in the day, the N1 mixtape, you know, basketball, you know, guys doing all types of different moves. You know, that was the deal back in, you know, in the 90s, if I can remember correctly. And I remember being on that field like, man, you know, we should do that in football. So I remember just doing whatever it took to get to the quarterback or make a guy miss. And I think that's where it really originated from on the football field, but it was natural for me to do it because I get called for traveling all the time in basketball.
Dwight Freeney joining us. That's great. That's awesome. Before I let you go, you've said that beating the Patriots in 06 in the playoffs ranks right up there with winning a Super Bowl. It's a really strong statement. What do you mean by that? Why do you feel so strongly about that?
Well, because of the fact that they were the mountain that we had to climb. That they were the thorn in the back or the side that we couldn't, you know, get out or just get over, you know. And it was year in and year out, we're tripping and falling over these guys. And we felt like we had the better team. We just couldn't get over beating them. And the energy in that building, you know, in Indianapolis, I've always will say that was the loudest game I've ever played as a professional in that stadium. That particular game, the energy was out the roof. I get chills thinking about that moment, you know, the week leading up to it. You know, it was just an amazing, amazing experience. It's you know, you go into a Super Bowl week, and obviously you're going to have that energy. But I was having that same energy and that feeling in a AFC championship game, and it was 1 week to prepare for this thing. You know, so you had 1 week of just pure adrenaline rush, you know, could barely sleep, get ready to, you know, go into battle with these guys. And when we beat them, you know, just the energy in the city, you know, we knew once we beat them that the Super Bowl was going to be no problem.
So, Dwight,
who we were going to play, we knew the Patriots were the team to beat that year.
You know, I was going to say, sorry to jump in, but, like, I don't want to be that guy who says, well, what are you going to miss the most? Because whenever somebody retires, you get that question. But when I hear you tell that story like that, I wonder, I mean, what do you miss the most? Is it the highs of the wins, the lows of the lows, the relationships, maybe the preparation that you lay out for that week? What will you miss the most?
I think a little bit of everything, but I think the most, to be honest with you, is that feeling, that adrenaline rush. It's that those goosebumps that you get. It's like, you know, I kind of try to explain it to people who, you know, when you watch, you know, that movie Gladiator, and, you know, and he sits in the middle of the arena and you hear everybody roar of the crowd. That is what you're going to miss. It's like a drug in a sense, because it's addicting, and that's why guys keep coming back, because you can't replicate that in anywhere else in your life forever. It's done. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to be able to – I can't – you know, there's no situation in my life where I'll have 80,000 fans cheering for me and or our team and for one thing and going at it. You know, it's something that you would just have to experience to know how that feels. And I think that's the biggest thing I'll miss.
So finally, Dwight, you seem to understand that. I think you've got a really, really strong perspective about that. Generally, the guys that you know, the guys you played with and played against, how do they treat that? If you know that already and that you can never get that, do you spend the rest of your life chasing that? Do you understand you can never get that and just put it in a box over there? How do you approach the rest of your life? Because you're a young man.
Well, yeah, no, you put it in a bottle and you try to put it in a bottle and then just kind of reflect on it. You know, it's kind of hard. You can't replicate that, and people try and do different things. I mean, you know, I'm very competitive, so for me, it's the golf course, right? But even the golf course can't match to it, because first of all, it's not your love, and second of all, you probably suck, right? So for me, it's kind of like, you know, I get on the golf course, I'm playing against guys that I used to play with or whatever, and great, we're playing golf, but it can't compete. You know, you hit the ball, and it's going right, all right, so I swing left, and then I swing left, it goes right, then you get mad, you play worse, So it's completely a completely different deal, man. But it's the closest thing I would say for retired guys that I know to getting that competitive juice or thing back in their life, you know. But it's just obviously completely toned down and a completely different ball game, you know.
What an amazing run. 16-year NFL vet, Super Bowl champion, a member of the All-Decade team, 125.5 career sacks, Dwight. I don't know what you'll do. I know you'll be great. Hey, listen, man, this better not be our last conversation. Whatever it is you're doing, I need to run you down. We could talk football. We could talk golf, whatever you want. Just tell me this is not our last conversation.
Definitely not, man. You're my guy. Whatever you need.
Appreciate you, Dwight. Thank you so much. Congrats. It was an amazing career and really nice to have you back. Dwight, thank you so much.
No problem.
Dwight Freeney, my man, he is so good. Love talking to him, love watching him play, and normally I don't get all weird like that, but I feel that strongly about that guy. That had best not be our last conversation. I actually feel the same way about our next guy, and he's in studio, Arian Foster. And because I've done this, as long as I've done this, you know, you get further and further along, and people are less and less willing to say things. And I don't mean say things just to say things. I mean, have an opinion, express the opinion. Have a point of view, express that point of view, and especially have one that's different. Nobody like my next guest. And he's got a brand new album out. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about his approach to football and some other things that interest him. Remember, Arian Foster was the one who said, if you want to be interesting, be interested. That's coming up next. Stay tuned. My thanks to Dwight Freeney. Look, I know a lot of you had a bad night for a couple of reasons. Number one, a lot of people have trouble sleeping. Number two, all I need to know about how your night was to flip open TweetDeck and read your tweets. I can tell. Why did you have a bad night? Because you snore or somebody close to you snores, so nobody's getting any sleep. There is a solution to that problem. The revolutionary Zipa device. Zipa is a game changer. If you snore, you're not sleeping. If you're not sleeping, you are not succeeding. If you're not succeeding, you're probably not very happy. If you want to be at your best, slam a Zipa into it. It is the solution that will help you get a great night of sleep so you feel your very best in the morning. Everybody who sleeps next to somebody who is snoring is going to have a problem. Fix that problem with a Zipa. Zipa is the only snoring solution of its kind. If you snore, you need to get a Zipa. Go to ZYPPAH.com. Easy to remember because Zipa is happy Z spelled backwards. Go to Zipa.com right now. Get yourself a Zipa. Tell everybody you know who needs one to get a Zipa. ZYPPAH. ZYPPAH. Zipa, get the great night's sleep that you need and deserve with a Zipa.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. We are live in Southern California, and we're coming off a conversation with Dwight Freeney. Roll that right into another NFL conversation. I'm joined right now in studio by a four-time Pro Bowler and an All-Pro. He was the 2010 rushing champ. He led the NFL in rushing TDs twice. He is the host of his own podcast, the Now What Podcast. He is a recording artist. He released his debut album, Flamingo and Koval, under the stage name of Bobby Fino. We will get into all of that. He is a very good friend of the program. He was on our podcast. He is now in studio live, Arian Foster. My man, it is so good to see you. Arian, how are you?
Likewise, brother. I appreciate the plug on that. That's nice right there.
Dude, that ain't bad at all, right?
You got a nice studio, man.
Not bad. Appreciate you saying it. Listen, you know now, you can appreciate the aesthetic because you have your own studio.
For sure.
How's the podcast life?
The podcast is fun, man. I had no expectations going in. That's really how I live life anyway, but I have no expectations going in. That way, so I don't get disappointed. But it's been a journey that I've grown from, and that was the kind of the goal on it on the onset, was to kind of explore myself via conversation with other people, and it's been beautiful. I've had like epiphanies mid conversation, like really, and it's fun. It's growing. It was small, and now it's growing. We got a pretty large audience now, so it's fun, man.
Arian Foster joining me in studio. So give me one epiphany. Give me one epiphany during one conversation that you had.
I was talking to my man, and if you haven't checked him out, you need to check him out. His name is Inky Johnson. I played. You've heard of him. Absolutely love him. So I played college ball with him, and I got him on my podcast. And he's like the most optimistic human being you'll ever meet, and I'm probably one of the most.
Arian, excuse me. For those who don't know, give them the backstory of Inky, because when you say he's optimistic, it's one thing to be optimistic. It's another to be optimistic with his life and what happened.
Sure. So he was a college athlete just like me. We were in the same college class, and he ended up hitting a guy on an onside, and he injured. I couldn't tell you what he injured, but he injured something in his neck, and he ended up paralyzing his left arm. And he took that where guys would either curse the sky or curse the whatever it may be. He took that as like an opportunity to grow, and he just remained super optimistic and just the most positive human being you could ever be around. And he developed into a motivational speaker because his optimism just was infectious to everybody around. And when you listen to him speak, you'll see why. And so when I'm talking to him on my podcast, we talk about everything from the NCAA to his life, my life. And the funny thing is, we've kind of reached the same conclusions in life, but in different pathways. And I found out through that conversation that I'm like in the term, I'm a pessimist because I'm an optimist.
Explain that. I like
right,
that.
Right, right. So I think that people in general are stupid, and people in general are, I don't think people are inherently good, but I want them to be, and that's why I'm so pessimistic, and that's why I'm so judgmental off rip, is because I'm actually rooting for the good in people. I just don't see it, but I'm rooting for it, and I want it. It was a dope moment for me.
So how does he see it? Does he think that people are inherently stupid or dumb or bad, or they're inherently good? How would he say that?
I don't want to misrepresent his position, but from what I got from him is I don't think he looks at it like that at all. I think he says, you're where you're at and your journey, and I respect that. And that's what it is. Like, I mean, he's a Christian man, and I'm an atheist, right? And he doesn't look at me like, you're going to hell. He looks at me like, hey, wherever you are on your journey, like, I understand that you're a good human being. He's like, we don't see eye to eye as far as theology is concerned. But, like, you treat me like a brother. I treat you like a brother. You're at where you're at in your journey, and I'm at where I'm at.
He doesn't judge. He doesn't judge.
Kind of Christ-like.
Arian Foster joining us. You mentioned he's a man of faith and you're an atheist. Man, you know how social goes, right? You know how social media goes. You like to have conversations on social media. You've got a very open mind. But when you drop that on social, hey, by the way, I'm an atheist. How does that go over?
It's a mixed bag. I think secularism in the United States is kind of growing, really just in general, not just in the country, but it's growing. For the mere fact, I think there's so much information out there now where it's not just your mother or your father, or your community funneling you information. Now you can be interested in whatever you want and then go seek the information that you are interested in. So now it's not like the backlash I got from when I first came out, quote unquote, as an atheist. It's not as harsh now as it is now. And now, like, my following knows about it, and most of my following is pretty secular anyway. But you know, you get your, you know, atheist eat babies,
right?
And then you get your people who are like the opposite too, but like hardline atheists assert there is no God. I'm not that atheist. I think and I try to explain to people, atheism gets misrepresented a lot. It's not an assertion that there is a God. It's just a position that I don't. It's a position on the claim that there is a God that I don't believe that position, but I'm open to it. It'd be cool if there was, but I just doubt it.
Well, that's essentially your thing too. You're open to all this. You're open to all these things. Arian Foster joining me. So we're in studio right now. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see the album cover, or if you're listening, you can imagine this. But people who know the title of the album, Flamingo and Koval, they understand that's a reference to Tupac. You and I talked about this. What was it about Tupac that resonated with you so much?
When I was little, there wasn't a lot to hope for. When you're growing up in, you know, bad circumstances, they didn't have a lot of money, turmoil in the household, community just looks bad. Just, you know, you've seen it before, everybody's seen it before. But when you're growing up in those circumstances, there's not a lot to hope for. And like, and so your superheroes kind of are your athletes and your musicians. Athletes were pretty PC back then, so they kind of drew the company line when it came to anything political or any kind of things feeling. So when you're looking at a musician that can reach inside of somebody's home and say, I've been where you're at and there's hope. It was just something for me that I sat at home and cried to some of his songs before. Just when you feel like there's nothing out there for you. And he helped me cope through those times.
All right. So when he was shot and killed, how old were you? Do you remember? And What kind of an impact did that have on you, given what you just laid out?
Right. I was 12. I remember exactly where I was. I came home from football practice, actually. And my mom told me and she was like, as an adult, I understand it now. Like she was like, oh, son, Tupac died. It's crazy. And I was like, what? Like my world was like, he's my only poster on the wall.
Right.
My world was I cried. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't even understand 100% what death was. You know,
you'll learn. It's all right. I'm glad you're comfortable like that.
But no, I don't. We really.
I like, what's going on, Rome? When you and I last spoke, you were dropping F bombs, and now it's a problem. Come on, Rome.
That's my fault, man.
It's all right, man. I got
we
you.
We lose sponsors.
I got
man.
You.
I'll cover you. But no, we don't really understand what death is now. So. As a child trying to take that in, one of your heroes are falling. It impacts you heavily, and so as an adult, you kind of see his flaws and where he could have been a more impactful human being. But he was such an impactful human being that he still resonates through our culture today.
All right, so I'm looking at the album cover. We're joined right now in studio by Arian Foster. And the album is called Flamingo and Koval. So if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you see this. If you're listening, you can either look this up or imagine it. I'm looking at the cover, and it's really, really aesthetically pleasing. It's interesting. There are two hearts. Right. One looks pretty happy, almost.
Vision is everything. That's what art is. You interpret it how you feel. So go ahead and shoot.
Yeah, I think that partly it depends where your frame of reference is and where you're coming from. I'm seeing a heart on your shoulder, and he looks pretty happy, or she, or whoever it is, frolicking about, pretty happy. You know, a certain lightness, and the other one is definitely depressed. He's got his hands on his knees. He's got a certain heaviness. The weight of the world on his shoulders. And then I see behind you something, a totally different topic, the galaxy. And I know you're about physics now.
Right.
So this is kind of what I'm seeing.
Right. So, yeah.
How did I do?
You did pretty well, man.
Thank you.
You did pretty well. So the thought behind it was the heart that's sitting in the chest is where it's, quote unquote, supposed to be. And the heart that's on the shoulder is where it's not supposed to be. And where you are supposed to be, you're kind of... you kind of distraught, you're depressed, and the one you got that right, and the one that's frolicking, great word, is kind of just happy and freely being about, and it's kind of a metaphor for the entire moniker of Bobby Fino is where what you're doing, whatever you're doing to keep the lights on, whereas where you're supposed to be usually is something that doesn't fulfill you as a human being, and you're not very happy doing it. But where you're not supposed to be is where you're most free. And I wasn't supposed to be making music. I'm not supposed to be making music, but it's where I look up at 3 a.m. and I have an 8. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's really all I do in my life now is try to inspire people via conversation, via art. It's just trying to get people to go back to that person that you once thought you were, that you weren't once thought you were going to be. It's because it's just not like, so I know we go, we get up, we go to work, we got to pay the bills, but like, you have to step outside of the matrix sometimes and just really look and be like, this is not what life is. Like, it's not about keeping the lights on. It's about enjoying it.
Aaron, there's a lot to unpack there, but this is why you come in here. Let me ask you this then. If you do what you have to do to keep the lights on, and we all do, and in a lot of cases that's not what you should be doing or what you want to be doing, was football to keep the lights on so you could ultimately get to this, and is that not what you necessarily want to be doing?
I mean, as a 31-year-old man, I say, yeah, I understood that I had a talent in playing football, and I fell in love with the sport. Don't get me wrong, but it was something that I felt like I had to do. I always felt like I had to play football. I had to take care of my family. I had to make sure my family was good. I had to make sure my kids were taken care of. And it was never something that I mean, when I was a kid, I think I fantasized about being the greatest running back ever. I just wanted to be the best ever. And then as an adult, you kind of realize, or I did anyways, I realized that a lot of the greatest of all time conversations is just barbershop talk. So legacy is just what people think about you in the barbershop. I don't care about what people think about me in the barbershop. And that epiphany hit me like midway through my career. Like, I really don't care what these people think about me, because they're going to think, well, yeah, you could be whoever you want to be. Mother Teresa, you could be Gandhi, and somebody's going to be like, he's a piece of crap. Like, it doesn't matter what these people think about you. So I'm literally breaking my bones to appease other people. Like, I can't do this for much longer. And I knew that I still love the game, but at the end of the day, I knew that it wasn't something that kept me up at night.
Did you love the game, or did you love what it could do for you?
I love the game. Okay. I truly love the game. I did. There was times where I hated it. I got up, went to meetings, and I was on my way to practice. Like, I hate this. I cannot stand this. And then I'll get an outside zone carry. And when I had the ball in my hands, it felt so freeing. And that's what I fell in love with as a kid, because it took me away from the problems and the ails that I was going on, that was going on in my life at the time. And it took me back to that time where I just felt free and I could just escape. So I did love the game, but it didn't fulfill me as a human. I didn't feel like I was adding anything to society.
Aaron Foster joining me in studio. All right, so one of the tracks on the album, A Friend, A Fan, A Kid, right, it's from the perspective of how a friend of yours, a fan of yours, and a kid of yours all view you. Right. So as an athlete, how did you view the relationships in your life?
Right. So, I mean, it's very... the reason why I made that track was because I think I needed a segue, because I think a lot of musical careers that transition from athletes are awful. I'm going to be honest. They're not good. And I think they're not good, not because... art is subjective in general, but I think the reason why the quality isn't there is because people don't give it the thought and the time that artists do. It's their livelihood. And I think you have an off season and you just get in the studio, but like, you don't really put in the thought behind what message are you really trying to convey? What are you trying to give to the masses? And that track is a beautiful segue, in my opinion, from an athlete to a musician. if you look at it, with an open mind. Because it is a really detailed account of how I felt people in as the relationships in my life viewed me. Like, you get that, like a friend of mine, you get that, oh, well, why ain't you talking to me anymore? Oh, you think you're Hollywood now? And then a fan is, oh, you're a dumb athlete, just shut up and play. And then as a kid, it's like, I mean, I love my kids to death, but it's hard to be that dad that's making you peanut butter jelly sandwiches every single day when you got to go out and provide it to a certain level where you never have to worry about where your meal is coming from. Some things that I had to worry about as a kid. So it's balancing all those relationships. That's why you see a lot of abuse in narcotics. You see a lot of abuse with other people in entertainment. It's because those stresses from entertainers weigh heavy on people. And they don't know how to deal with it because they're the breadwinners. They don't have nowhere to go. And so I was lucky enough to, you know, have this avenue where I could express these things. And I always did. And by no means did I walk a perfect life. I had a lot of bumps in the road, man. But I think this stuff kind of helped me keep sane.
Aaron Foster, my guest, his album is coming out right now. In fact, it's already out. You know, before I let you go, one last thought. What do you make, as somebody who's not afraid to exchange thoughts, opinions, share your thoughts, what do you make of the difference between how the NBA and the NFL responds to players speaking out on social injustices? Right. This is something important to you, but there's a definite distinction between these two leagues. What do you make of that?
I think it's indicative of how ownership and league offices view their players. So in the NBA, I think they view their players. I mean, they understand that their players are the product. In the NFL, they don't. I don't think they look at them like that. I think they just kind of look at them like cattle and they'll be replaced. Whereas, I mean, it's true. Don't get me wrong, but it's true in the NBA as well. But I think the NBA understands that the brand of their league is the face, is the faces of these players. And so they keep a good relationship and they say we're partners rather than employer relationship. And I think that that proactive relationship builds character. I mean, amongst everybody. Like, if you look at some of the rules or some of the things that the NBA does, they say go be active in social injustice.
They encourage it.
They encourage it. And the NBA, NFL, they shun it. They do shun it, and they tie social activism to anti-Americanism, anti-police, anti-everything, which is the opposite of what is the truth. But I mean, these kind of conversations are important, whether the NFL or the NBA is active or encouraging it or not, because we're all products of the society and we live in the society. So I think you have a responsibility to partake in these conversations and understand the nuances that have everybody up in arms or not. But it's important to have these conversations.
Have the conversation. Yeah. Have an open dialogue. Have the conversation. This debut album is out right now. It's Flamingo and Koval, released under the stage name of Bobby Fino, Arian. So it would seem pretty self-evident and obvious, but not everybody knows how to get something like this. If they want to get the album, how do they go about getting it?
Right. It's on all streaming platforms. So whether you use Tidal, whether you use Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, Pandora, whatever you use, it's on there. Just type in Bobby Fino and it'll pop up. And I appreciate every ear, man. I think if you give it an honest listen within the first track, you'll understand that it's different than any athlete album that you put out. And honestly, it's different than any album that you're going to hear right now, because I care about it. And I use musicians of the highest quality. Like, we do this.
I was going to say, one last thought. You and I talked about this on the podcast. Was that not a concern that people are going to come in with preconceived notions? How good could it be? It's an athlete. I know this guy. I see this guy a certain way. You're trying to get them to come in with a blank slate, right? Mm-hmm. An open mind. Just listen to it and forget who did it.
Right. It's not necessarily looking for them to come up with an open mind, because that's hard. That's hard to do. You have to be a very balanced person, sure, to come up with an open mind. So just listen to it, because I feel like once you hear it, you'll see a distinct difference between, not like I said, not necessarily just athlete albums. I don't think it's a question. It's the best product an athlete has ever put out. That's not even a question, in my opinion. And I'm a humble human, but it's just obvious to me. but when you look at some of the music, it's on par with some of the music today. And the beauty of it is these songs are like 3 or 4 years old. I've been working on this for a while. So like the stuff I'm working on now, I'm gonna continue putting out great music, and it's quality. So if you have some time, man, it could be a soundtrack to your life, man.
Flamingo and Koval, Arian Foster, under the stage name of Bobby Fino. My man, so good to get caught up. Really nice to see you here in studio. I think it's a great piece of art. Really nice to have you. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you,
boss. Arian Foster doing it in studio this time. We ran fat. We ran long. Sorry about that, but we'll do that for the right guy. Let me get out right now. Time for sports. Make the right game plan for you. Farmers Insurance has practical insurance knowledge gained from more than 89 years of experience. Find an agent at farmers.com. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, I'm back in my customary spot in the middle of the desk. Moved over from my radio spot. All right, so quickly, some reaction to Arian Foster. Jeremy and Scani tweets, holy moly, great interview with Arian Foster. At Jay Tweetsky, Arian Foster is the truth. That was one of the realest interviews I've heard in a long time. At JP Emmett tweets, that was a podcast quality interview, pimp. Arian Foster throwing truth. He was so good, as expected. All right, quickly back to the earlier part of the program where I played you a piece of audio and I asked you the classic question, what's that sound? So far, nobody's gotten that right. Nobody's gotten that right. Here are some of the guesses. At Bama D17 tweets, that's NASCAR. No, it is not. at SteveHX. I don't even know what this guy's going to say. I know it's going to be wrong, and I know it's going to be lame. Let's see. Benito Santiago using a lawnmower to shave. Doesn't even make sense, Steve. It's not that. And my 2 cents worth. Tire getting changed. Not that. Bobby P tweets, Charles Barkley wrapping up a dentist appointment. Not that. At Penguin 488, is it Mangino at the buffet? It's not that. At Bill Deemer, LeBron taking a jackhammer to the Air Canada Center and the Raptors. Getting warmer. Close. That's the best guess yet. At Rich Micklebust, that sound is clearly Rachel clearing her throat. Simon Shayad, is that the sound of Jewel brushing her chiclets? Getting worse. Getting worse. At Seymour PDX, is that the sound of a Dane Cook butt biscuit?
They both stink worse than a Dane Cook butt biscuit. I'll three you later.
Rock bottom. Matt Dragon tweets, is that sound Corey Pavin gnawing through blocks of cheddar in a cheese eating contest? This car's skidding off the road now. You happy with that, Alvin? You shouldn't be. At BudGuy850, he tweets, I know the sound. Everybody knows that's a Delephant eating corn on the cob. Make it harder next time.
It's me.
Alvin, get your ass to your room, Junior.
Dude.
You did not just do that. No, it's none of these things. At Machmoda tweets, is that the sound Dr. Joe makes when he adjusts Hawk's back after another golf shoe injury? All right, no. You want to know what that is? All right, all those guesses are wrong. And since nobody's gotten it, let me just put it out there. The answer is, that is the sound of Patriot tight end and noted wild child Rob Gronkowski firing a minigun. A minigun. A machine gun.
Yo, sir, Fiesta.
You gotta see this video. Aaron Donald training with fake knives. At least that video is insane.
Roger that.
It's freaking Gronk at a shooting range in Jordan shorts and a t-shirt, unloading, holding a minigun. And I don't know why they call those things miniguns. I'm not a gun guy. There's nothing mini about that gun. It's like a six-barrel rotary machine gun that hooks up to an electronic motor and can fire up to 6,000 rounds a minute. But why the hell is Gronk going all Master Chief and firing this thing?
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
Because Gronk has a part in an upcoming Mel Gibson movie. I can't even talk over it.
Give me back my shot!
He's got an upcoming part in a movie called Boss Level. And the director of the movie is the same guy who shot the video on Instagram. So that's the connection. Gronk, Pro Bowl tight end, party animal, method actor. Yo soy fiesta, Gronk.
Yo soy fiesta.
Yo soy fiesta. You trying to play me off with that, Albie? We trying to play me off? I'm trying to talk. Yo soy fiesta, Gronk. Yo soy fiesta. Alvin, I can't hear myself think.
Yo soy fiesta.
Alvin. What's better than you playing Adele with an elephant? There it is. Yeah, just Gronk squeezing off like 8 million rounds a minute. Thanks for playing along. Sorry if you didn't get it right, and none of you did. There's another rousing rendition of You Name the Sound. Great. Gronk with a machine gun. What could go wrong? No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has got a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, count on Ferguson. Thanks, Alvin. Thanks for nothing. Podcast Tuesday, Ep 36 with Bruce Arians is going to drop in about an hour or so. Look for that. My thanks to Arian Foster in studio. Dwight Freeney came on. Chris Haynes also was a guest. The XR4TI. Having a pretty good day. Nice job, y'all. Clones, you had a nice day. The Kyle and Green Bay, have a great time at Javier's. Give my best to Lef and Benton and whoever else shows up. Rest of you, see y'all tomorrow. Thank you very much. We're out.